Welcome to Green Connections Radio. We help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm John Michelson. You can find us on greenconnectionsradio.com, on talkers.com/talkersradio. Follow us on Facebook and send me a note on Twitter at John Michelson. Happy holidays. So it's the end of the year, the beginning of a new year, and we wanted to bring you some programming that we thought would resonate for end of the year planning, especially financial planning and business planning. So first up today, we have Julie Fox Gordy of Pax World Investments Worldwide talking about socially responsible investing, how to put your money where your mouth is, basically, with your investment portfolio. She's a leader in this space, and she's remarkable. And then we have Joel McCower, who is chairman and executive editor of Green Biz, which also does the Verge conferences. You've seen them on our website and probably possibly even attended one. And maybe you were at Verge in San Francisco when you saw me online in the live stream. Joel and I will be talking about trends for 2014 in sustainability in business. And then we have Nancy Fund, who will also be talking about investments, but clean tech investments, investing in small businesses, and investing in women-owned businesses as well, and helping to get mid-career women in energy, greater visibility, and greater opportunity. And then we're going to close tonight because so many of us spend much of our holidays going to concerts and various types of entertainment. We're talking to AEG Entertainment's Director of Sustainability, Jennifer Reagan. So if you want to hear what the entertainment sector is doing to reduce their carbon footprint and address some very interesting issues, I don't think you probably would have thought about otherwise. So first, I'd like you to meet Julie Fox Gordy. Dr. Gordy is Senior VP of Sustainable Investing for Pax World Investments. Julie is an icon in this industry. She's been in it for a long time. She comes from all different sides, from the financial management side and from the environmental side, having worked at the Wilderness Society and the EPA, as well as at Calvert, the other investment firm. And she's also on the steering committee for the UN Environmental Program's work on biodiversity. Welcome to the program, Julie.
Thank you, Joan. Good to be here.
Thank you. So for the novice among us, since this is a fairly new topic, maybe not to you and me, but to a lot of people, what is sustainable investing or socially responsible investing?
So sustainable or socially responsible investing is a kind of investing where your portfolio is constructed with certain criteria applied that pertain to environment, workplace practices, and community impact.
So where do you start? I mean, what comes first?
The thing that comes first for us is often, but not always, the financial analysis. Then they send it over the aisle or send it across the aisle for an ESG or environmental, social, and governance analysis, which is what I do. Every company takes things from the earth and then has waste products. What you're looking for are companies who are mindful of what they're taking from the earth and what condition they're in when they're returned to the earth or to the environment.
If I might jump in, there are also a lot of investments into carbon sequestration and carbon capture and reducing the whole CO2 emissions thing. I interviewed a terrific woman, for example, at 3M, who has figured out a way to separate the carbon and the oxygen molecules underground so that it never actually emerges as CO2. Do you take those research projects by companies into account, or is that too much of a level of detail?
That, in fact, is the level of detail that we're most interested in the investment process. So when you invest in a 3M, what exactly are you investing in? I mean, are you investing in a vastly expanded market for Post-it notes, or,
right,
you know, are you looking for, you know, sort of that next breakthrough idea, or both? You know, it's usually going to be a combination of things. So you look at a Ford and say, oh, gosh, they make a lot of SUVs, and they make a lot of, you know, fairly gas-guzzly cars. That's the reputation of Ford. They have done a lot, though, a lot that a lot of people don't yet realize in terms of really greening their fleet. They have a long ways to go, like all automobile makers do, but, you know, they're not as brown as you think, or as many people think they are.
Hmm. What is the ROI? What's the connection between environmental policies and ESG performance and financial performance?
I have been collecting academic studies that look into exactly that look at the connection, usually statistical connection, between some form of ESG virtue, maybe environment, maybe workplace, whatever, and some form of financial outcome like a return on equity or return on assets or a Tobin's Q or something like that. I have about 250 of them now. All of them show that there's a positive correlation. In other words, what that means is that companies that perform better on ESG frames, environmental, social, and governance criteria, tend to do better financially over the long term.
That's cool. Well, I want to get to tips for our listeners in a moment. But before we get to that, one of the things that you talk a lot about is governance and the need for diversity and the need for transparency. Can you address, you know, why does that matter? How does transparency and how does diversity affect the performance, the financial performance? Because let's face it, in the end, an investment portfolio is to make money.
So what diversity does is it brings diverse voices to the table. There's been a fair amount of research done showing that diverse groups do a better job of decision-making, meaning they will consider more data sources, consider them more fairly, and monitor the outcomes more assiduously than homogeneous groups. Men, and different, you know, blacks, whites, browns, whatever, everybody on them, tend to do a better job of overseeing management than strictly all-male, white, 55-year-old boards.
And by how much?
Again, it's not something you can measure. The studies have looked at various things like attendance records, amount of time spent on committee work, on the riskiness of the company's investment portfolio. So there are a whole lot of different measures, but you can't sum it up into sort of one nice measure that says by how much.
Oh, shucks. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, so let's get to the juicy part. What are some tips for people to look at if they're doing their own active investing, or they want to evaluate what their investment advisor is doing and they want to look at their portfolio? What are some tips and some criteria that they can use as a lens to review their own investment portfolio against?
Unfortunately, there aren't tons of tools for individual investors, but there, if you look at the Social Investment Forum website there, you get some ideas of what the range of tools is, and as well as a lot of tips to, you know, so finding a financial advisor who knows how to speak this tongue. There are a lot of financial advisors who are very deeply knowledgeable on the financial side, but not so much on the ESG side. So one of the things, if it were me, you know, if I was talking to my financial advisor and I said, are you concerned at all about the tar sands and which companies are in my portfolio that are operating in the tar sands? If he or she can't answer that question, or says, hey, don't worry about it, just make a lot of money and then you can give it to an environmental charity, find another advisor. Mm-hmm. Because the advisor should be able to turn you on to resources that you can use to assess the issues you care about. So if the issue you care about is animal welfare, you know, you want to know, do any of these consumer discretionary companies make fur? And if they do any of them use wild trapped animals? If that's something you want to know, you should be able to find an advisor that can talk to you about them.
What is the website for Social Investment Forum?
That is www.ussif, United States Social Investment Forum.org.
Okay, great. By the way, looking at some of these companies, they do corporate social responsibility reports. Are those window dressing or are they meaningful?
Yes. So here's some tips, right? So when you read the report, the only message you're getting is this company's great, we're perfect, we're wonderful, it's probably window dressing. Every company could be better, period. Every company has some slip-ups. If they're not telling you here's where we missed this goal, here's where we, you know, were penalized for a RCRA penalty or something, you need to be able to see that in the report. In other words, you need to read, you know, about the company's performance, not just its happy anecdotes. If the only numbers in the report are page numbers, it's window dressing. If it doesn't have any quantitative targets for anything, so we want to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 5% by 2015, stuff like that, then, you know, it may be window dressing. Not all companies that are serious about sustainability have quantitative targets, but the more quantitative targets they have, the more likely it is that it's not window dressing.
Interesting. Just in closing, I know that because you and I've gotten to know each other, that I believe you have at least one child in college. Am I correct? So what's your take on the university endowment controversy, as my father would say? There's a movement now among students and some parents to alter the endowments of major universities. There was a big controversy with Harvard, for example, so that they don't invest in fossil fuel companies. So do you look at the endowment investment portfolio of the universities that your kids are in?
Yeah, well, my kid is in New Hampshire, University of New Hampshire, and I actually worked with a lot of very talented, smart, thoughtful staff at the University of New Hampshire and several students who recently convinced the trustees to add a sleeve to their endowment fund or endowment portfolio that was, in fact, sustainable investing. So, and they're probably going to continue to consider the divest fossil fuels. So, you know, I can say from personal experience, it is possible a lot of endowments are considering this, either fossil-free or sustainable options in their for their endowment. And I think it's great. You know, well, those who espouse the, you know, just, oh, just get rid of all the, you know, fossil fuel stocks in your portfolio, that's a bit of, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. And that by itself is not necessarily going to solve the problem altogether. But the problem of climate change is going to need everybody, absolutely everybody, pulling their weight. And that's one way to get that to help happen. So I'm delighted to see that happen. I'm real happy with that.
Well, thank you so much, Julie. I really appreciate your help, and I appreciate you looking out for us and our investments. Dr. Julie Fox-Gordy, Senior Vice President for Sustainable Investing at Pax World Management, and her environmental, social, and governance-related research and criteria for sustainable investing. Thank you so much for being on Green Connections. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Dr. Gordy is just amazing, and sustainable investing is so important. She's been ahead of this curve for so many years and brings an incredible perspective. Some of the things that I took away from my conversation with Julie are, you know, what comes first? And it's the financial filter. You have to look at things from the financial side first and then eliminate companies as you go based on the other filters and figure out what your priorities are. Life is about priorities, isn't it? It just comes down to it more and more each day. The other thing that I heard was that transparency is so important about the environment. And yes, their sustainable responsibility reports matter, but, you know, look below the numbers. When I was in the financial world, you know, there was a big focus on footnotes. Look at the footnotes in the reports. Look at the quantitative targets. Are they realistic? Are they frequent? Or are they just window dressing? And do they talk about where they missed the goal? Not just what their goal is, but did they miss the goal? Do they look at the issues that you care about? Another thing that I heard her say was that we need to look at degrees here, because you have to keep in mind that no company is going to be 100% perfect. Are you a sustainable investor? Tell us about your criteria. Send it to me on Twitter at Joan Michelson, post it on our Facebook page, or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. Coming up, another angle on investing. We'll hear from Nancy Fund, who is managing partner of DBL Investors. If you are an angel investor or you have a portfolio that you want to invest in small companies and startups and companies from that angle rather than just buying stocks, listen to Nancy Fund, and she'll also, if you're an entrepreneur, she'll tell you tips on how to present to investors. So stay tuned for Nancy Fund of DBL Investors. We'll be right back.
Capital Audio Post, your one-stop shop for your post-production needs. 703-712-8757.
Our services include video editing, sound design, sound mixing, ISDN recording, and many other media-related services.
Let us finish your project no matter where you are, across the U.S. or across the world. Go to www.capitalaudiopost.com. Call us at 703-712-8757.
Let us know how we can help you finish your production.
You're listening to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio. Talkers Radio is a service of Talkers Magazine at talkers.com. Be sure to catch Healed Planet with Alan Combs every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Talkers Radio. And now, let's return to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio, a service of Talkers Magazine, right here at talkers.com.
Welcome back to Green Connections. We help you live green, work green, and earn green. You can find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com. Like us on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Joan Michelson. We're here again with Joel McCower of greenbiz.com and the Green Biz Group. Thanks for joining us, Joel.
Hello, Joan. Thanks.
You're welcome. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
What I wanted to talk to you about in particular, because you have such a great vantage point with Green Biz and talking to all these business leaders and community leaders and government officials at the city, state, and federal level, what are the trends that you see for 2014?
Well, that's a big question, and I'll try to just get touch on two or three of them. But I think the first one that I see has to do with chemical transparency, which really is about some of the biggest retailers pushing on their suppliers, the companies that make products, to be more transparent about what chemicals are in their products, and even to eliminate some of them. So one of the things we saw during 2013 was that Walmart and Target and some other companies started telling their retailers, first of all, disclose chemicals. Second of all, here are 10 what are called chemicals of concern, sort of a euphemism for toxic chemicals, that we want to get out of products. And we're going to start rewarding you based on that. And so we've seen some of the world's biggest consumer products companies like Procter & Gamble and Unilever start to respond, eliminating some sort of geeky solvents and plasticizer and antimicrobial things that, while they were well-intended, may not be best for human health. Things like triclosan, which actually the Food and Drug Administration in December announced that they were going to phase out or eliminate. It's my antimicrobial thing we have in soaps and all kinds of things. And there are some of those products that were companies still insist they're perfectly safe, but some of these ingredients have been linked to reproductive and developmental harm in animals, and we just don't want them in our own product.
Wow. Well, yeah, VOCs have been linked to some of that too, but go ahead. What else?
Well, water has been an issue for a long time, and this is really about how companies operate in a world where there are growing droughts all over the world, in the U.S., in Brazil, in Russia, in China, in Eastern Europe. And that can change very quickly the price of key commodities, whether it's corn or soy or palm or other things. So companies are having to think more about water, even if they're not big water users. And so that's something that we're seeing more and more rise to the surface, if you will.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot, too. In fact, I did a segment on WTOP on the water issues, and there was a great documentary done. I interviewed the woman, Ann Feldman, who did it, called Water Pressures, about this whole issue. Water is enormous. And I think it's really scary because people don't like to think about water scarcity, but it's a huge problem. On your website, I saw a few trends that some of your folks highlighted, and one of the ones that caught my eye was behavior change. I thought that was pretty interesting, and I tend to agree, actually. I mean, obviously, the person who did that was Alex Lasky of Opower, and I can see why he said it, because Opower is in the behavior change business, if you will. But tell us a little bit about your thoughts on behavior change and if you see that as a trend as well.
Well, behavior change has been a challenge ever since I got into this field 25 years ago and wrote a book called The Green Consumer, and we were trying to understand what will it take for consumers to change. Now it's a little bit more specific around things like energy use and driving, and in terms of how do we get consumers to sort of rethink what they do. And, of course, this is a problem more in developed countries like the U.S., where we've always had this stuff and we grew up with this stuff and we don't think about it, and electricity and the ability to jump in the car and drive anywhere and everywhere we want is sort of second nature. But the question is, in a world where of finite resources, do we need to drive everywhere? And are there other models of us than owning a car, things like ride-sharing, companies like Zipcar and others that are cropping up? And maybe those are even better because, we always talk about owning a car gives us freedom. Well, it's actually, owning a car is kind of a hassle. You have to buy it, fuel it, insure it, park it, repair it. But what gives us freedom is access to mobility. So that's one aspect of behavior change. And then the other is just, you know, how we live our lives in our house in terms of use of energy and thinking about just simple things like turning on and off the lights, but also how we buy what we buy. I mean, do we buy an appliance or a car or even a house based on its first cost, what we actually pay, you know, at the checkout, so to speak? Or do we buy it on what it's going to cost us over a lifetime?
I agree completely. But there's also behavior change, I think, in companies and in buildings. I mean, I interviewed Darlene Pope of Core Advisors, who does energy management and in what she calls intelligent buildings. And one of the things that they found was that you had to change the behavior of the people in the building. Sam Brook, who is the head of sustainability for the city of Washington, D.C., recently found that they reduced their energy consumption 7% over a 9-month period simply by turning the lights off in city buildings during the weekend.
One of the big trends we find every year, and every year we always look at what are the most clicked-on stories on greenviz.com, and inevitably the top one or two or three stories have something to do with employee engagement. That's just a topic that every company is struggling with. How do you engage employees and enlist them in efforts to, you know, save energy and water and waste and really make them part of the solution? And in the process, you know, make employees happy, engage them, retain them, attract the best and brightest, because people want to work for good companies. So this is a topic. It's really a perennial trend.
That's very interesting. And that goes also to another trend that we talked about at Verge a couple months ago, and I also saw on your Verge Winners defining the trends to watch in 2014, and that is data. The more data that you have, a company has, about what the employees are getting involved in, the easier they can give them tools to manage them, and the more data they have on the buildings and the warehouses, as you mentioned, the easier it will be to help reduce the energy consumption. They'll see where the gaps are, and in fact, they'll also see where aspects of the system may be in need of maintenance and repair before they blow up and become a big problem. Do you still see that data is going to be a big issue in 2014, or have we sort of mastered that in 2013?
Oh, no. Data is just going to be a big factor for the rest of our lives and for a long time after that, because, you know, it really underlies everything that's happening in technology and buildings and the way we work. And, you know, we all know this as consumers. We, you know, from our smartphones to, you know, the things that happen in our cars, I mean, everything is smart.
Mm-hmm. One of the trends that I've seen is a rise in chief sustainability officers and director of sustainability positions nationwide and worldwide, really, in companies. And some of them are more integrated into the entire business, and some of them are in the marketing department or the PR department. Do they have any real authority or budget? Do these positions make a difference, or are they just window dressing?
Well, at Greenviz, we have a membership group of about 75 sustainability executives from very big companies, and we bring them together 3 times a year to talk to one another. And these are really amazing people, because they tend to be armies of 1 or 5 or 7 people in, you know, multi-billion-dollar multinational companies, and they have obviously no headcount, very few human resources. They have tiny budgets, and it's fascinating how they work. And some of them are being extremely effective, you know, for my money, doing God's work and just really, you know, pushing a rock uphill inside their organizations to affect change. And many companies, I mean, can credit the significant improvements they've made over the past 5 or 10 years to those executives. So my hat's off to them.
Cool. Just in closing, you guys got some pushback recently on your sustainability pioneers' lessons from the trailblazers.
There was a report that one of our regular contributors did, and she had done this independently. It wasn't our report about who the pioneers were in sustainability. And it, based on the methodology she used, and it was a she who did this, it turned out they were all men. And it is, you know, like so many other fields, there are too many, you know, middle-aged white guys, and I speak as one, you know, at front and center in this. But what's great about this, and I mentioned our the executive network we have of sustainability executives, about half of them are women. It's very encouraging to see that this is not actually, in fact, a male-dominated field.
Well, I appreciate that. And of course, you know, that's a key part of Green Connections. So I was very happy to see the pushback. And maybe it is a methodology problem. But I think also, frankly, it's a problem that women don't step up. And so any of the women listening today, I think you need to step up and nominate yourself and don't wait for somebody to nominate you. Well, thank you so much. Happy holidays. I look forward to collaborating with Green Biz again in 2014. And have a great day.
Thank you, Joan.
Thanks, Joel. Joel is so remarkable. He's been at this for 25 years, as he said. He's been ahead of this curve, and getting his take on what the trends are is really valuable because he can come at it from that long-term perspective of having seen this industry grow and, in fact, being one of the people who birthed it, if you will. I was fascinated to hear his take on the trends, this issue of transparency in general. He brought out chemical transparency, which I thought was particularly valuable as we try to eliminate all these multisyllabic words that we see on products and those that we don't even know about in some of the products that we buy, like buying clothing and you have volatile organic compounds in child's clothing or something or in your carpeting or your furniture, and you don't even know that it's there because there's no ingredient label per se on your couch, right? And him talking about water. Water is such a huge issue. I think it's scary because people are used to turning on the water and having it be there, and it's such a basic element of survival that I think people are afraid to focus on it because it is so daunting. And then this behavior change issue is so huge, both for consumers and for companies. Companies need to engage with their employees, as he talked about, and get reduce their energy use and also address driving. I love that line, what gives us freedom is access to mobility. That's such a key thing. Think about that for a while. That's a good one. With the other trends that he talks about quickly are data. That goes back to, frankly, connects with transparency, intelligent buildings, and behavior change, where the more data we have, the more we can see our behavior and the more we can see what we can do better. I mean, it's as simple as if you're on a diet, you want to log what you ate, right? And so you can really see it. And the directors of sustainability and corporate sustainability officers question, I thought was really interesting that he's now seeing responsibilities integrated into people's overall jobs and that the CSOs and the directors of sustainability may or may not have an actual budget, but that they have influence. And let's face it, folks, right? We live in the land of influence. Influence is what makes the world go round, even if you have budget and line authority, right? I mean, I'm sure you do in your life. Everything has to happen by influence. So tell us what you see the trends are for 2014 in energy and sustainability. So thanks for being with us, and we'll be right back with more from Green Connections.
His name is Robbie Student. Interesting name. Interesting guy. Robbie Student is a philosopher, he's a record producer, he's a political observer, and he isn't afraid to open his mouth. But he ain't no wonk. He's a person, he's a husband, a dad, a real regular guy. Okay, maybe he's not so regular, but I mean he's not weird or anything like that. He's somewhat of a loose cannon, although I mean that in a completely positive way. Okay, mostly positive. You never know. Robbie Student. He's the kind of guy you just want to hang with a couple of hours a day. Or maybe just a few minutes a day. It can be hard to take. But then again, so are most people hard to take. Whatever. Robbie Student does talk radio here Monday through Friday with a brand new show live between 1 and 3 p.m. Eastern Time that you can call into. When Robbie Student is on the air, you never know what's going to happen, which certainly makes it interesting. Robbie Student, 1 to 3 Eastern, Monday through Friday, only on Talkers Radio.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where Hosting for HostingForCheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because HostingForCheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online. From building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase, HostingForCheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's HostingForCheap.com. HostingForCheap.com. HostingForCheap.com.
You're listening to Talkers Radio. Be sure to listen to The Talkers Show weekdays at noon Eastern Time, The Robbie Student Show weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, The Brent and Meg Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and Healed Planet with Alan Combs Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Talkers Radio is a service of Talkers Magazine. And now back to Joan Michelson and Green Connections on Talkers Radio at talkers.com.
Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm Joan Michelson, and you can find us on greenconnectionsradio.com, like us on Facebook, and follow me on Twitter at Joan Michelson. I'm here at the Climate Leadership Gala with Nancy Fund, the managing partner of DBL Investors, a venture capital firm focused on the double bottom line, as in DBL, doing well by doing good. Their investments include SolarCity and Tesla Motors, founded by one of tonight's Climate Leadership Gala Award winners, Elon Musk, which is pretty cool. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, though, with you being on the board of these companies and listening to you challenge Elon Musk. That would have been really fun to listen to. So welcome to Green Connections Radio, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Joan. It's great to be here, and I'm really excited for the event tonight.
Thank you. We don't have a lot of time today, so I'm going to jump right in. What do you see are the bright spots on the double bottom line business horizon?
Well, you know, double bottom line investing for social and environmental impact has never been stronger. We've been doing this now for a little over 10 years, and it used to be we were out there in the wilderness by ourselves, and now it's a very common term. People know what DBL stands for. They understand that you don't have to sacrifice financial return to accomplish good in society and to help protect the planet.
That's great. I mean, there's a million questions I could ask you, but what are the trends that you're seeing? Are there where are the investors putting their money, and how can you see those trends when you have a broad portfolio?
Well, you know, I was just looking at some numbers on the flight out here, and of the 10 top stocks, the 10 top performing stocks this year so far, three of them are clean tech stocks, which is incredibly precedent setting. It's Tesla, SunPower, and SolarCity. So that's a real landmark for a milestone for our industry, that they're up there with Netflix and kind of household names. And that's just the beginning. I think we're just getting started. And what you're seeing is that in addition to voting for candidates that protect and enhance the environment and the planet, consumers are beginning to vote with their wallets and vote with their stock portfolios and choose investments and choose products that support their view of a better world. And so I think that the consumer is getting increasingly sophisticated to invest and buy products from carbon light kinds of companies.
So socially responsible investing and also in considering the environment when you make a purchase. I saw a study recently by Cone Communications that 71% of consumers now consider the environment when they make a purchasing decision. What are the technologies that you see coming down the pike? What are the game changers that you see?
Well, there are a lot of them. I mean, that's the good news across various sectors. Certainly in the renewables energy space, storage is a huge a trend that's just about to start reaching the mainstream. There have been investments from the ARA period, you know, 4 years ago, and now these technologies are coming out of the lab and into their pilots, and you're going to see the incredible benefit that a few hours of storage can bring to firming renewables, to making renewable energy even more reliable and able to operate round the clock and do it at decreasing costs. And that's really going to be a game changer, because in many ways, with the cost coming down, storage is like natural gas without the fracking.
Well, and that's also going to bring down the cost of electric vehicles, which I'm sure Tesla is happy about, and so will GM, because I know that the Volt is, you know, most of that cost is batteries. Storage is a huge piece of this whole thing. What kinds of companies are you looking to invest in? Do you invest in startups? Does the company need to have generated revenue? I mean, what is the sweet spot that DBL looks at?
Well, we prefer not to invest in the proverbial engineer in the garage where he or she is just trying something completely new and technically challenging. We prefer to go in a little bit later. They don't have to have even revenues necessarily, although we prefer a little bit of traction on the market side. But they just need to have worked out some of the technical risk and be in markets that are big, growing fast, and open to disruptive new entrants.
So would you say that like having an SBIR grant, for example, or an STTR grant would be a validation of enough of a technology that you would be interested in it?
Well, it's hard to generalize, Joan, but certainly any company that has already gone through a vetting process and secured funding from some outside source that's legitimate is going to have a leg up on someone that's de novo in many cases. It's hard to generalize, though.
Right, I understand. Well, I won't keep you long, but what do you see as the portfolio of energy sources, say, in 10, 20, maybe even 50 years from now? I mean, how much do you think we're going to ever get completely off of oil and gas and coal, or do you think that that's just going to get cleaned up? Where is our energy going to come from in, say, 10 and 20, maybe even 50 years?
Well, I'd like to see the roles flipped. There's always going to be a role for fossil fuels, but it's going to be a diminishing one. They're expensive. They harm the climate. They bring extreme weather that causes devastation to our people and to our cities and neighborhoods. So we can easily flip that, and instead of renewables being in the 10 to 20%, you know, grow them over time so that they're the majority of our energy source, and we use fossil fuel for more specialized applications.
Boy, that's a long conversation. Before I let you go, as a woman in this space, you are a minority. How do we really need more women in this industry? We need the innovation. We need the diversity at the table. We can't win the economic goals with half our team on the bench. So what do we need to do to bring more women, including mid-career women? I'm not just talking about college kids who we incubate at an early age, but mid-career women too. How do we get them into this industry and attract them in and help them get promoted?
Well, it's a lot of things that we need to do. We need to help our young women and girls in science and technology and embrace the disciplines that can help solve some of our problems and help that through the K through 12 and then on into higher ed. There is a group that I'm a part of, the C3E Women in Clean Energy Ministerial that the DOE has created along with other countries around the globe. The specific goal of this program is to help mid-career women advance. And we, for example, every year, this is our second year, you can apply to win a prize in various categories if you're a mid-career woman to recognize that your accomplishments, be that in a not-for-profit, in government, in a startup company, really honoring the fact that women are out there and maybe just aren't as well known to people. And so we're trying to shine a light on that, and we're going to have a two-day conference on women in clean energy, September 19th and 20th, I think it is, or 18th and 19th, at MIT, to really delve into the whole area of women in energy and ways to increase our numbers.
Great. Well, you know, that's near and dear to my heart and Green Connections, and we'd love to be a part of that. I've heard of C3E before, and I really applaud the work they're doing. I think we need a whole lot more of them. But thank you so much for being here, Nancy, and for the work that you do and for the role model that you provide. Thank you, Nancy Fund. She's so incredible. Nancy Fund of DBL Investors. If you are a clean tech investor, let us know. Tell us what kinds of projects you're working on. email us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com, send it to me on Twitter at Joan Michelson, or post it to us on our Facebook page. That would be great to hear about your ideas and what you're working on, especially women in energy and sustainability. Now for our segment on hits and misses. Okay, this is a big one for me this week because there have been big things going on. First, I'd like to give a round of applause, thank you very much, to General Motors. General Motors named Mary Barra CEO. She's the first female CEO of an automaker, and she was an executive assistant at one point. She's been with the company for, I think, about 32 years. Her dad worked there as well when she was a kid. And she worked her way up. She was made head of the global design group for the last couple of years during the crisis. The crisis presented an opportunity for her, actually, her leadership to be seen. And now she's been made CEO. And I just think that's fabulous. So we have a request out to interview Mary Barra. We've had it out there for a while, well before she was made CEO. So email General Motors and tell them that they should allow us to have Mary Barra on Green Connections. Let's make it happen. Thank you, General Motors, for promoting Mary Barra. On the opposite side, I think I'd like to give a bop on the head to Twitter, which went public with an all-white male board of directors. I mean, really. Guys, this is 2013. You're in Silicon Valley. You're in the land of Sheryl Sandberg's lean in book and force, if you will. You want to tell me that there aren't any women that could qualify to be on your board? I mean, give me a break. No, thank you. And I'd also like to give a bop on the head to a company called Kiduzi. They make science toys and building blocks toys for kids, which is great. But all of the boxes of the toys only have little boys on them. Do you think, Kadoozle, that little girls do not play with building toys and science toys? I mean, come on. You can do better than this. And I'd like to close with a round of applause for MGM in Las Vegas for putting a massive solar system on their property. We're very excited about this. It's groundbreaking, and we all know that there's a lot of sun in Las Vegas. I know. I used to live there. So we think it's a great trend. So thank you very much for that. Stay tuned. Coming up, a very interesting conversation I had with Jennifer Reagan, Director of Sustainability for AEG Entertainment, which runs about 60 venues worldwide and manages the events, hundreds, maybe thousands of events worldwide, and also manages some sports teams. So they have a heck of a portfolio, and you've probably given them some of your money. So I think you'll want to listen to my conversation with Jennifer Reagan. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And send us your questions for Jennifer at my Twitter feed, which is at Joan Michelson, or on our Facebook page. See you in a moment.
You're listening to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio.
Every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, well-known talk radio and television personality Alan Combs hosts a very special and different one-hour program called Healed Planet with Alan Combs. It's quite a departure from the Alan Combs we all hear on Fox News radio and television. It has very little to do with politics and everything to do with cosmic consciousness. Healed Planet with Alan Combs explores parapsychology, astrophysics, quantum mechanics, the environment, the meaning of dreams, synchronicity, theories of life after death, 21st century spirituality, and the mysteries of the universe, all in one dynamic, open-minded, leading-edge radio program. Don't miss Healed Planet with Alan Combs, Sunday evenings at 8 ET, right here on the Verbal Gymnasium of the World Wide Web, Talkers Radio.
You're listening to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio, a service of Talkers Magazine at talkers.com. We want your feedback. Send us an email. Your opinions about our programming, your suggestions, or things you'd like to hear, send them to info@talkers.com. That's info@talkers.com. And now back to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio.
Welcome back to Green Connections. We help you live green, work green, and earn green. During the holidays especially, we tend to go to concerts, and here at Green Connections, we like to cover the arts, as you probably know. So today, I'd like you to meet Jennifer Reagan. She's Director of Sustainability at AEG Entertainment. AEG may be familiar to you because you might have attended an event at one of their venues, or because of the Michael Jackson tragedy. Jennifer spoke at the Schneider Electric Conference recently, and where we met, and she spoke about a key issue that was both important in the Michael Jackson tragedy and in sustainability. What, pray tell, could I possibly be talking about, you're probably thinking? Well, it's insurance. Think about it. The changes that need to be made to a facility to increase its energy efficiency, reduce its carbon footprint, for example, may well affect the insurance coverage of the building. So I'd like you to listen to my conversation with Jennifer Reagan. I think you'll find it fascinating. I was very interested that you were talking about how some of the sustainability initiatives you want to do, you can't do because of insurance issues, which is really interesting to me. So can you talk a little bit about, I mean, you talk about solar panels and things like that, some of the lighting issues. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's kind of unique.
Yes. I was referring specifically in the presentation to getting the insurance for the roof cost covered when you added the weight of solar panels to it, considering what the maximum weight of an event's lighting rigging would be, light rigging. So what's unique about our industry is having our venues be flexible to the needs of the client, which could be as simple as, not that a hockey game is simple, but in terms of light rigging, it's very simple, or to the Grammys, which is one of the most extensive lighting systems, or live telecast where they have cameras hanging from the roof. So when we were looking at building a solar panel system, we wanted to maximize the roof square footage, but we also needed to consider the weight. And so we took the most recent Grammys, which was in 2007, and used the numbers of their light rigging to estimate what the rigging would need to be, because they were the highest weighted rigging system.
And then, sort of a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, exactly.
To clarify for the audience, the Grammys are held at the Staples Center, which is in your portfolio of properties.
Thank you, yes. So AEG manages and owns 58 venues. And so these are issues that we might deal with on a local level at the O2 in London or Minneapolis with the Target Center. But at Staples Center specifically, we installed solar panels in 2008, which were the largest system of its time on any sports facility. And it was a big success for us. We were very happy with it. But we could have done more in terms of more solar panels if our primary business wasn't hosting events, but that's our primary business. And we want to make sure that's front and center. So what I was referring to was not being able to get the insurance on the roof membrane if we were to have a heavier weighted solar system.
But oh, is it the solar system that was too heavy, or is it that the lights couldn't be hung from a ceiling that had solar panels on it?
It was a maximum weight that the roof could bear, and we were looking at both angles. So what was the maximum weight of lighting we wanted to be able to have, and then the net of that between the maximum the insurance would cover was what we could do in solar panels. I bet you if we did it now, it wouldn't be economically feasible for us to change out, but I do think there are lighter panels even only 5-6 years after.
So what are the top five maybe issues that facilities face in sustainability? You talked a little bit about your goal. You talked a lot about your goals, but talk about the top five priorities and how you manage them. Which ones you can, you can control more than others, and how you go about achieving them.
Thank you. So I always like to say and give frame for our audience that AEG is in three industries: facility management, live entertainment, and sports management. And we manage sports teams, we manage live events, and then the facilities where those occur. And with that, we are affiliated with over 100 events. More than 100. We're affiliated with over 100 facilities, of which only 58 of them do we have a contract with, a management contract, where we manage electricity, natural gas, water.
So you can only really control 58.
Exactly. So our environmental program, although we create tools that can be used by any of the 100, and sometimes are, we are only measuring the footprint of those 58, which is a huge accomplishment. We're the first in our industry to measure that footprint. But we focus in on the 58 because that's where we can leverage change and improvement. And I think you asked me, how do we prioritize? And it really is a combination of looking at the local conditions where the venue is. We want the program to reflect the community on all levels. So, for example, in states or regions with water drought, we will focus on water efficiency. So in California, Southern California, we were the first very early adopting waterless urinals. So all of our venues have waterless urinals. It's 468 waterless urinals. Might be 486. Sometimes I flip those numbers. In Australia, we use a lot of water-free technology and reclaimed water in our venues out there. So it really is a matter of, in some cases, the resource limitation or the cost of the resource makes it a very simple business case that makes a lot of sense to the community. And in other areas, maybe the municipal structure doesn't have a program, but we recognize the value of bringing it, and that's really around recycling. So recycling is one of those things where some cities have it, some cities don't.
Recycling is a huge issue, and there's a movement now. In fact, some of the consumer product companies are launching to actually take recycling out of the hands of the municipalities because they, frankly, are not doing the greatest job one could do. I mean, only 8% of the plastic we generate in this country is recycled. What are some of the other priorities? You talked a little bit about water. How much LED lighting or how much energy efficient lighting can you do in a venue of this magnitude? I mean, I would imagine that these are really where your costs are, and how do you pass that along to either the guest who's buying a ticket or to the concert promoter, or how are those costs worked out?
Well, energy is the second greatest spend, and with second only to labor at our organization. And within energy, lighting and HVAC are the top two within that category. So lighting is a huge focus for us, and we've definitely been systematically doing continual upgrades. So when we are looking at changing up bulbs, if there's an easy transition to a different, more efficient bulb, we do that. If it's a more advanced ballast change, we actually look at Staples Center in LA saved $80,000 by changing 2,000 halogens out to LEDs. That was a pretty simple transition.
$80,000 over what period of time?
A year. That's an average. It's about 2% of the energy consumption was saved in that one change. And then we also have small venues like in the Midland Theater in Kansas City, which changed out 4,000 of their bulbs in front on their marquee and saved 16,000, which was actually overtime.
Do any of those savings get passed down to the guest in
a
ticket?
Well, in truth, what's nice about it is the cost of those don't get passed on either. So in terms of the way our economic model is different in every city, and we have an operating budget that can sometimes be tied to ticket sales and sometimes isn't. It really depends on the model that the city or the owners developed. And in most cases, it's really about driving down that operation cost.
Just to wrap up, because I know you have a train to catch. You mentioned the LA and the metro system. In full disclosure, I ran the marketing for the rollout of the LA mass transit system in the past. And so it's near and dear to my heart. And some of the incentives and partnerships that you're talking about were some of the initiatives that I started, frankly. I know what it's like to get Los Angelians unstapled from their cars. It's not an easy experience, despite the fact that they complain about traffic and I've been on the 405 where you're going literally 5 miles an hour, and it's not pretty. So talk a little bit about the partnerships that you're doing with the public transit systems where the concert goer or the sports event attendee is going to get an economic benefit from using public transportation at the same time.
Well, you would have been involved in this, but in Los Angeles, the LA Kings have had a long-standing relationship with Metro, which is the LA City Municipal Transit. And they, if you show your Metro ticket, which is a little harder to do with the tap card. So if you show or demonstrate some level of Metro use, you can get a discount on your ticket and or a discount on concessions occasionally. But and one of the great things, I gave up my car when I got this job, which was 6 years ago.
In L.A.? LA, you're without a car? Yes. God, I did that a long time ago, but I can't imagine doing it now.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I take an express bus to work, and I take the red line to my office meetings, and I move between Muni lines and City lines, and
oh, you're on my train.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
By the way, we had a kids contest to name Metrolink.
Ooh, that's fun. Well, and they have great public art on the trains, but yeah. One of the things they're always advertising is the Kings, and they have transit TV in there. All of a sudden, I'm in there, and I hear the buzzer that I normally hear in arena, and I'm watching the transit TV, and they're like, come to the Kings game, and get your 10% discount. So it's a great program, and in some other cities, like Minneapolis, we're able to encourage biking, and we really use our messaging platforms from our websites, our social media, or even the events in our venues to try to get people to carpool, take transit.
Do you have charging for electric vehicles if people drive an electric car?
We do. Not at all of our venues, but in California we have 8 at LA Live, which is where Staples Center resides. It's an entertainment district. We helped install some in Rose Garden in Portland, and we're working on that right now. We're looking at expanding the program.
Great. Well, I have 100 other questions for you, but I'll let you go to your train to my hometown, New York City. Jennifer's handle is Redhead Green Girl?
Yes, thank you.
So apparently she's tweeting all kinds of fun facts about conservation. So thank you so much for being on Green Connections and have a great trip back.
Thank you very much, Joan.
Isn't Jennifer fabulous? So the next time you attend a sporting event or a concert, look around. See if you see signs of sustainable practices like recycling or solar panels. And let us know. Let us know what you see. Let us know where you are. And let us know if you want to give them a round of applause or a bop on the head. I was at the Renaissance Fair earlier this year, for example, and they had no recycling. I couldn't quite figure that out. So they got a bop on the head from me for that. So thank you for joining us. Let us know, what's your experience with socially responsible investing? What trends do you see for 2014? What part of your goals relates to sustainability and green energy? Are you going to increase the energy efficiency of your home? Are you going to give up your car like Jennifer did and do a rideshare program? Or are you going to buy an electric car? Maybe you're going to buy a Tesla or a Volt, which is a hybrid or a hybrid vehicle, let us know. Email us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. Follow me on Twitter @JoanMichelson and post it for us on Facebook. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a happy new year and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Green Connections with Joan Michelson on Talkers Radio, a service of Talkers Magazine. Be sure to listen to The Talkers Show weekdays at noon Eastern Time, The Robbie Student Show weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, The Brent and Meg Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, and Alan Colmes' Healed Planet on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Talkers Radio at talkers.com.